We just want to do a disclaimer before we start the episode. Things discussed here can be graphic, traumatic, or potentially triggering to individuals. So keep in mind who is listening and be mindful of how it will affect them. This is Life on Duty, a podcast giving firsthand accounts from the first responders regarding scenarios that have affected them emotionally or mentally and how they've dealt with it. Hey guys, what's up? This is another episode of Life on Duty with Dobby and Oz sitting off to the side of the table with no microphone. Nobody wants to hear what he has to say, so we're going to cut him off a little bit here and there. He'll just yell in the background and let us know what's going on. I am here with Rosa today. She's a pretty close friend of ours. We know her pretty well. She's actually on our shift, and she's one of our crews. Rosa, why don't you go and tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
I've been in an EMS for about 6 years. I'm currently in paramedic school. I'm a mom of one. I have a 3-year-old son.
You got a story that you'd like to share with us today? I'm just going to hand it right over to you and let you get started.
So this was probably, it was definitely 3 years ago, probably 3.5 years ago. It was not long after I had my son. I was still working part-time. I was working a day shift with one of the guys that has worked here forever. And if I remember correctly, it was the first call of the morning. We got called for a pediatric full arrest. So we start going over there. Dispatch is like giving us information as they get it on the way over there. And the dispatch information was 1-year-old, unknown downtime. Nobody was performing CPR at the time. They were attempting to get the child out of the crib and onto the floor so that dispatch could talk them through CPR. At the time, I had a 1-year-old, and this was my first pediatric call after coming back having a kid. So it was already hitting a little bit rough. And then after getting the dispatch information of not knowing how long he'd been down, parents didn't want to perform CPR, I just got really emotional. I told my partner, I was like, I'm going to cry. Like, it's going to happen, just so you know. And he's one of the old timers that doesn't do well with emotion.
We call those the salty old dogs.
Salty old dog does not do good with emotion. So I was trying to reel it in as best as possible, but knowing that it was like this call was going to get to me. I just knew it was going to happen.
Did he have a response at all for you?
He said that it wasn't going to bother him, that he understood. So we get there. It was us. There was probably 6 or 7 police cars there. Parents were in their bedroom when we got there. They weren't even in the bedroom with the kid. Walk in. It's this really shitty apartment.
What do you mean by shitty apartment?
Just a very unkept apartment. There was trash everywhere when we walked in. It was really messy. Okay. Really messy. It was not well kept. The police show us where the bedroom is for the kid. And we walk in and there's just this little boy laying in the floor wearing nothing but a diaper. And he was as white as a sheet. Like, he'd been gone for a long while. That in itself was really rough for me because I've got a kid the same age. So seeing a kid the exact same size as my son laying there, zero signs of life, I'm like, oh man, that's really uncomfortable.
A significant reality check.
Right, right. The parents are in their bedroom, which was like right next door, and they're just screaming at each other. Like, there's no signs that they're actually upset. They're just like pissed off at each other. And so then I'm like confused because like your kid's next door, clearly dead, and you don't seem upset. You just seem pissed off that you're in this situation at the moment. We finally get the mom out of the bedroom and police were talking to her, and we were just kind of there. She gives the kid's date of birth, which was 1 day before I gave birth to my son, which just really drove home that reality check that
Absolutely. That
could be my son.
I did want to talk about the family fighting.
Okay.
Because when you mentioned it, it brought a thought to my head of a call that I was previously on, and I was wondering if maybe I wanted to get your opinion about it. When somebody dies, we all know what happens. they start to go through stages.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Do you think that the anger or aggression or the arguing that was present was based around that possibly? Or do you think it was guided towards there was malicious activity possibly?
I think on the mom's side, I think it was probably just her trying to deal with the grief and getting through waking up to your child being dead, basically. I don't really know with the dad or whoever he was to this kid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure. I know that there was a lot of trying to place blame, yelling, going back and forth. And then the mom had other family on the phone that was also contributing to the conversation. And then later throughout the call, like, you know, whenever we were just in the apartment waiting for everything to wrap up, there were people, I guess police officers on scene making comments about how there was like a lot of empty spray paint cans everywhere.
Oh.
And so then the mom caught wind of that and then got in defensive mode. So there was a lot of emotions that unfolded on that scene, and none of them really seemed to make sense to me at the time.
Oh, absolutely. What do you think now?
Now I feel like she was just overwhelmed mm-hmm. with emotion. Like she didn't, it wasn't real to her.
Mm-hmm.
So she was just trying to grasp at anything that was going to try and make her feel better.
Yeah. The reason I wanted to bring it up was because we do want people to understand certain circumstances. So when somebody does lose someone, just for those of you who don't know, we're talking about the stages of grief. Previously, it was 5, but I think it's been upgraded to 7 now. And those 7 stages are going to look like shock, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, testing, and acceptance. And the reason I wanted to bring it up with Rosa was because I was on a house fire where somebody had burned up inside of it. And the family arrived as we were on scene. And it was something I'd never encountered before. I was still a fairly new paramedic. The family went through like accelerated versions of this where they would be entering anger while the other people would be entering bargain because they would be arriving at different times. And then the angry people would be extremely angry with the bargainers because we've already been there. You know, they went through that and they realized they've progressed, but nobody was there to assist them with it. And as a new medic, I had no idea how to manage that. And I see it a lot of time on scene when a bystander arrives to support somebody and they just don't understand that what that person's going through. So it's important for us providers to be mindful of where those individuals are at because we can be able to assist that in that moment to give that person some relief.
Well, and also I think to be aware, I've encountered multiple times, they'll go back and forth.
Right.
Like they'll go from being super upset and grieving to bargaining, to back to just grieving, and then they're just mad. I mean, they'll go back and forth at the moment. They don't have an opportunity to really grasp the situation.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not rational. For that house fire, they were under the impression that the individual was hiding in the woods by the house, knowing that everybody thought that they were in the house. And I remember thinking, like, how bizarre that they would think that is. And even so, you try to rationalize with them, like, is that something that they would do? Like, they would want you to think that? And they would just be like, no, but then they wouldn't be able to convince them otherwise. So absolutely, they can, I would say, totally bounce back and forth and be able to not rationalize properly.
Well, and be able to be aware that those feelings aren't directed at you as the provider.
Yes.
Because I feel like a lot of times there are people that they'll get defensive with the bystanders or the family that come on scene or even the patient sometimes. Mm-hmm. Those feelings aren't directed towards us. Unfortunately, we just get put in that spot.
For sure. That's a really important point. I agree with that completely.
How old were you at the time?
25.
Okay.
So me and my partner went outside because the police were going to have conversations with the parents. They wanted to do an investigation with the whole thing. Mm-hmm. We all knew there was no life-saving measures that were going to save this kid. So they asked us to step out because they didn't want anybody touching the child. They didn't want anybody in his room. And they were going to do private interviews with each parent. The shift supervisor showed up, also not one that does well with emotions. So I'm standing outside with both of them and trying to not just absolutely lose it because I just feel like it's unprofessional. As realistic as everybody knows that it is, especially on a call whenever it involves a kid, I still just feel like you can cry later. And he walked up to me, and I guess he could tell I was upset. And he was like, you can go to the truck and cry. And I was like, I can cry later. Like, I'm here to do my job.
Mm-hmm.
We stood out there for, it seemed like, hours. Then we finally went back inside because the coroner showed up and he wanted us to come inside with him. So we go in there, and I don't feel like the first time I walked into the kid's room that I really took in anything besides just, there's a dead baby in the floor. But when we went back in with the coroner, I was in there for a longer period of time. Like, to this day, I can remember exactly what this kid's room looked like. The sheet that was on his crib, they had the letters of his name on the wall. Everything. Like, it just doesn't go away. After that was really hard to keep it together then. I went back outside. My partner and our shift supervisor were talking about everything outside, and then one of the police officers came over and just started saying, like, this is super suspicious, and we think something's going on. And it was strange conversation to me to be happening at the moment with police and the EMS crew that was on scene.
Is that because of, like, you didn't have that happen before, or is it because you felt like it was, like, unprofessional, or you didn't aren't familiar with it?
A little bit of both. I had never had it happen before.
Mm.
And I just also felt like it was unprofessional. The dad was sitting outside, maybe 6 feet from us. So I did feel like it was unprofessional.
Okay.
I feel like everybody was thinking it for sure.
Oh, okay.
Just not really the right time.
Like, right now, where you're at, do you feel like you would feel the same way in, like, looking back? Because now you're more used to people doing stuff like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back then, you would have thought it was insensitive, but currently, you're like, it's just the way things are done.
It's just how it goes, yeah.
Okay.
I feel like it's maybe whenever all of us are in a tough situation together, that just kind of saying what we're thinking at the time to each other just helps a little bit.
So you felt like now that we just sit around and talk about it openly, you think it's a possible coping mechanism?
Is that what you said? Yeah.
Okay.
I also just feel more comfortable with people now because I've been in EMS longer. I've been full-time now for a little over a year. So you get more experience, you get more comfortable with people, and then they become the people that you want to talk to about hard stuff because you know they're going to understand.
Mm-hmm. So where'd you go from there?
I believe they had us go back into the apartment to talk to the mom. And at that point, the mom was visibly upset. She was crying a lot. She was really antsy. Like, she was all over the place. She wouldn't sit still. And she kept saying, whenever I walked in to check on him last night, I saw his dad just standing over the crib, and he told me that everything was fine. Well, come to find out, dad is not the dad.
Oh, the dad that was on scene.
Yeah. Not the biological dad. And she said that, once she elaborated, she said that he had been in the kid's room by himself with the door shut for an hour. And then she went in there to check on the baby, and she just saw him standing over his crib and thought it was really weird, but didn't do anything about it. And she said at the time that the baby was fine. And I believe she said this was like 11 o'clock at night, and she didn't check on him again throughout the night.
So mom's suspicious, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And as is everybody else on scene.
Right.
Do you guys stay on scene? Do you find that you guys stay on scene a lengthy amount of time beyond that?
We were on scene for probably at least 3-4 hours altogether.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were there for a long time.
So you say that you can recall everything, like, very vividly, like, that's in there. Do you find that you have any aftermath, or it had any aftermath issues?
At the time, I did, yeah. So because I was still part-time, I stayed home with my son most of the time. I worked maybe 2-3 shifts a month. So I was at home with my son, and I was his primary caregiver 99% of the time. So after that, I did find myself kind of overcompensating, I think.
Such as?
Like, I was over-anticipating my son's needs. If I put him to bed in his own crib, then I was constantly checking the baby monitor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had one of those oxygen reading socks, and it just stayed open pretty much all night. I didn't sleep. If he napped on me, I wouldn't take a nap because I'd be afraid that something would happen. Like, it, the call came out as, like, a possible SIDS case.
Right.
So, even though following events and comments from things that happened on the scene made it seem like it was definitely not a SIDS case, I definitely think that kind of stuck in my mind for a while.
That it was even dispatched as a SIDS
case.
Right,
right.
Emotionally, did you experience anything?
I cried a lot.
Yeah?
A lot.
For how long afterwards?
Probably 2 weeks.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. And then did it just taper off and not return, or was it intermittent after that?
It was intermittent, but it wasn't nearly as frequent.
What would cause it?
I think whenever I would get overwhelmed or not necessarily upset with my son, but, like, you know, he's only one, so he would still have a lot of feelings. He would throw a fit, whatever. Like, and then if I got overwhelmed, I would feel really guilty because then I'm like, well, I can't even have the patience that I feel like I should have with my son whenever that little boy isn't even here anymore. It made me feel really guilty as a mom if I didn't feel like I was being the mom that I should be.
What about even, like, disciplining? Did you find that was, like, difficult in that
really
in that
hard.
Time?
Yeah.
Because it's like you just wanted to love him. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. What did the district that you were with at the time, what did they offer?
Nothing.
Nobody debriefed with it afterwards at all in any shape, way, or form?
After we left that call and got back to the ambulance house, I didn't talk to anybody about it again.
Like nobody back at the base or anything like that?
It's just
we're getting lunch.
Yep.
What do you wish or think could have been done that maybe would have helped you, equipped you, been more beneficial for you?
Maybe just having somebody reach out and be like, hey, we know you went on this call. It sounds like it was a rough call. Is it something that you want to talk about? Like, just knowing that somebody wanted to talk to me about it or would sit and listen to me talk about it. Because I didn't really have many people to talk to about stuff like that at the time.
You still were pretty new, so you didn't have, like, established relationships in the district yet? Or were you at?
Not strong ones, mm-hmm. No. Like, I had some people that I could talk to that they would listen and they would understand and they were supportive. Mm-hmm. But it was also one of those, like, I'm not super close to this person. So
right.
As much as it's bothering me, I don't want it seem like a burden.
Mm. Would it matter to you or mean more important or be more meaningful if it was along the lines of a text versus a call? Or do you think it would matter?
I don't think it really matters. Just because me personally, like, sometimes I'll think of somebody that I know is going through a rough time and I'm like, I don't really have the time to call them right now,
mm-hmm.
but I want them to know that I'm thinking about them. So I'll just text them really quick and be like, if you need to talk, I will make time to call you.
Mm-hmm.
But just so that they know that I'm thinking about them.
Right. Anything else that you think they could have done or would have hoped for?
Not necessarily.
Okay. Just to check in.
Yeah.
If they checked in on you and you were like, I don't know right now, do you think that a follow-up is necessary?
Maybe one.
Like 3 days later or something like that?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's really a coping mechanism or as much as it is of a callousness or complacency. Our last guest had talked about how he wanted everybody to know that you will see a lot of dead bodies.
Oh, absolutely.
And he was taken aback by the amount of bodies that he encounters. Hearing him say that, because that wasn't like something that I have ever thought about really. I just have always thought like this is the way it's supposed to be. I didn't have like a preconceived notion of bodies, but like maybe a callousness because we are acclimated to the environment regularly.
Right.
And a complacency of knowing that other first responders, like you said, maybe they're not coping, but we just know like they were on a body with us 2 weeks ago. So this is like Tuesday for them too. And then we overlook the fact of dad or stepdad is 6 feet away. So maybe it's just something for us to be mindful for. I think that's a really good point for you to point out because sometimes it matters to be conscious of things like that, even if we think they're criminals. Because as soon as the cops start sniffing out suspicion, you know, their demeanor switches immediately, like,
absolutely.
Are these people pieces of shit? You know, kind of thing, because they have a job to do of, like, trying to figure out if the baby deserves justice or not, kind of thing. So What do you feel helped you get past the big humps that you struggled with throughout that process?
Just not burying the emotions completely. Like, okay. If I felt upset about it, I just let myself be upset about it instead of just being like, no, it's fine. Just let it go.
Like at home.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Like just free crying when you can free cry.
No, I don't just cry anywhere.
I feel like certain settings, it's probably not crazy to think about. You know, it's you would go to that and then go to the Meemaw, who would be dead, who would be like, you get the opposite end of the spectrum, which could cause a crazy, you know, emotional stir in someone, especially somebody who's like inexperienced kind of thing. Like, I just watched my little brother go. Now I'm watching Meemaw go. This is, you know, crazy kind of thing. So something interesting that I just want to talk about for a minute is we were able to address second victims last time. We were talking about a car wreck, and you have successfully like demonstrated again is that second victims is a way of connecting a call that has an adverse effect on the patient or unexpected results. You guys end up finding that it's a one-year-old that is someone your son's age, and then you're finding ways to connect it to yourself, and then it's no fault of your own. It's just one of those things that we do as humans. Like, I have a kid that is my kid's age. They are the same sex. Probably multiple things in the room are matching the things that would be at your house. So I could see how it would do that. And then you go sit in the bedroom for a lengthy amount of time to take in the scenery and setting. But we all know that when we're on scenes with bodies, there's not a lot of activity to be done rather than like standing around until somebody says like, oh yeah, put them in the bag or, you know, like something like that. So, and it's just a lot of observation or goofing off for the most part somewhere far away. You did say something interesting is, let's talk about how you feel about the crying on the scene. Talk about where you were at then versus where you're at now. Cause you got some experience under your belt now. You've seen a few things and you've been on quite a few bad things here and there. So how has your opinion differed or has it even changed with that setting of emotion, how you control it?
So I think, thankfully, I've not encountered another call that has bothered me that much in the last few years. But I feel like I don't necessarily find it as unprofessional now because I think that if you're going to have emotions, it's normal. It's a human reaction to have emotions. Everybody has emotions. You're going to feel some way about something. I also just feel a whole lot more comfortable now with the people that I work with that if I'm going to be upset, then I know that they're going to have the right things to say to make me feel better, or they're going to be able to say, "Hey, we got to do this and then let's talk about it later." Like, there's just going to be more understanding. I feel like at the time that I was still so new. And I was part-time, so I didn't work that much and didn't know people that well that I didn't want to look like, I guess, weak.
Oh, yeah. Like, would you think that you're, like, intimidated by the idea of expressing yourself in front of those guys?
Oh, absolutely.
When you talk about being emotional on scene, do you find, like, let's say it's not a suspicious scene. Maybe it's just, like, a highly emotional or unexpected emergency death or someone's getting flown out or something to that extent. How do you feel about interacting with like patient spouses or parents or things like that? Like, do you have limits and boundaries that you've set for yourself in order to interact with them or that you're willing or not willing to do?
I don't think so. I try to keep an open mind whenever it comes to that because everybody that is in that situation is going to feel differently. Like some people, they're obviously distraught and they're sad. Other people, they're just mad. So I just try to be open to take whatever the emotion that they're going to have and be able to react in the best way that I feel like is going to be supportive for them at the moment.
How long did it take for you to stop being hyper-vigilant about your son? So the emotion stopped in 2 weeks, but that paranoia or that constant monitoring, when did you think that faded?
It hasn't.
You know, you think it's still present? Do you find it that it bothers you to be that way?
No.
Okay. That's good.
I don't feel like it's as much as like paranoia or associated with that specific call anymore as like now I'm able to just look at it as I'm a concerned mom and there's nothing really wrong with that. Like,
nice. Did you find that even 2 weeks afterwards, when you're experiencing those intermittent, did you find that like a way to speak to somebody, or did you go speak to someone, or just like friends, like overall, like did you see any professional assistance at all?
I didn't, no. I talked to some friends that I had at the district, but like I said, I wasn't super close with too many people yet, so that was a little bit difficult. I think what also didn't help a whole lot, and probably why it went on for 2 weeks, was that I would try to talk to my husband at the time about
it. Oh, okay.
And he would just brush it off and be like, oh, you're just overreacting. Like, it's no big deal.
Do you care to elaborate? Like, what do you mean? Like, what kind of discussions would take place that would make you want to, or that you would think you would brush off, or things like that?
I would get upset and like start crying, and he would notice that something was wrong. Mm-hmm. And so I would try to talk to him about it. And I had actually, when the call happened, whenever we had wrapped up and everything, gotten back to base, I had called him because I just needed somebody to talk to. And I was trying to explain to him like why I was upset and what had happened, and in so many words. And he was just like, I don't understand why you're upset.
Like in the sense of he was unable to relate, or do you think he couldn't grasp the gravity of the situation?
I just don't know that he wanted to.
Oh, okay. Like by him admitting that would somehow make him vulnerable or possible to suffer too?
No, I just don't think that he ever understood why I had an emotional reaction to calls.
Oh, okay.
Like I think his mentality was, you go, you do your job, and then you leave. Like, why are you upset about it?
And he wasn't in healthcare at all.
No.
So it's a common thing to encounter clinicians or providers whose spouses aren't, like, associated with medical stuff at all. So, or fire, police, EMS, whatever. What do you think that you would tell them to better function or communicate that would have changed Rose's circumstances or made him better?
Just be open to listening. Because I didn't really need any feedback or opinions. Like, I just needed somebody to talk to that I trusted and that I felt like would be there to listen to me and just let me be upset.
Yeah, Oz and I practice a regular exercise sometimes whenever one of us is like needing to speak to someone, and usually it takes us a little minute to get jump started about it. I'm really bad about it, but he's usually pretty good about 2 or 3 minutes into it. Like, do you need me to listen or do you need feedback? Because being able to identify that really changes the way that people can be supported, because sometimes people want feedback and other times they want to just feel the way you do, right, where people are supported. Other times, one of us has to be like, listen, that's not what I need right now. I need this kind of thing. And then Oz and I are good enough friends to where we can default to, it's not personal. He does, that's just what he needs right now kind of thing. And if they change their mind, they know that they have somewhere to come to. Because would you say that if they're open to listening, that you find that you would be more confident or comfortable like seeking, like having them talk to you at some point in time after they've listened to how you feel?
Yeah, absolutely.
Rosa, if you could, do you have any parting words for maybe somebody who has experienced that situation, somebody who hasn't, that is scared of that situation to come, and maybe the people who don't even understand it, maybe they don't even have children, kind of thing, of like maybe how to prepare for it?
I don't necessarily feel like there's a way to prepare for a situation like that, but whenever you find yourself in that situation, if you do, make sure you have people that will be there for you and be supportive, because to some people that might not be an emotional situation, but to other people it could be immensely emotional and bother you for a long period of time. So you just need to surround yourself with people that will give a damn about you, basically.
Yeah, when I was working on something on the Facebook earlier, it was the Facebook. I just said that like I'm like real old. I stumbled across a quote that had said something to the effect that if they're not there to build you up, like why are they present around you?
Right.
Like why are we keeping toxic people or people who are making us be consumed with nervousness or anxiety like present in our lives? So I think that's a really great point. Do you have any closing thoughts or words of wisdom for anyone out there in general? She's a woman of many words. Well, Rosa, thanks for coming out and sharing your story. We super appreciate it. And it's just good to hear different perspectives from people who are parents to fresh providers getting exposed to things and how they cope and how the salty old dogs probably could have done something a little better to make it seem like a better place to be. Those things in itself sometimes can compromise careers or professions as a whole if it's handled poorly. So I'm glad to see that you had the personal and emotional resolve to rise above those issues. So just want you to know that you're appreciated and valued.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Life on Duty. If you're interested in sharing a personal story you have and how it affected you, please email us at lifeondutypodcast@gmail.com. If you like the shit we discuss and want to hear more, follow us and give us something better than a 1-star rating.